Welcome to the all-new Garden Show with Peggy Ballester Howells. Live every Sunday from 10 a.m. to noon on 95.1 WOLD, home of New Jersey's greatest hits. You can call Peggy now with your gardening questions at 908-448-0951. That number again is 908-448-0951. Now here's your host, Peggy Ballester Howells.
Here comes Peter Cottontail, hopping down the bunny trail. Hippity hopping, Easter's on its way. Bringing every girl and boy baskets full of Easter joy, things to make your Easter bright and gay. He's got jelly beans for Tommy, colored eggs for Sister Sue. There's an orchid for your mommy and an Easter bonnet too. Oh, here comes Peter Cottontail, hopping down the bunny trail. Hippity hoppity, happy Easter day.
Welcome to the Garden Show and happy Easter to everybody. And I'm Peggy Ballester Howells and I'm here with
Jordan.
And it's Easter already.
Oh, it went so fast.
Yeah, it was just Christmas, wasn't it? But I still have a poinsettia in my dining room, and it looks really, really good.
It's beautiful.
So, do I have to replace it with an Easter lily? Is that required?
Oh, I mean, not required, but it would be good company.
It would be. They could hang out together. They're both white. That would work. Easter lily is a really beautiful plant, and there is a lot about it that most people don't get.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, it's hardy outside. Did you know that?
I did, because you have a couple in your Garden of Ancient Ruins.
Yes, that's correct. So. I do. And they come up. And the reason is that that they bloom normally in July, not at Easter time. Did you know that?
No. Then why are they called Easter lilies?
Because they are twisted and contorted and forced and shoved and made to bloom at Easter.
Oh, okay.
So they're grown in a greenhouse and forced. And it's really, really tricky because Easter moves around. It's not the same time every year.
Right.
So in order to get them to bloom at exactly the right time requires somebody that really knows what they're doing. Greenhouse growers that really do know what they're doing. And so they have to be started at different times, depending on when the holiday is.
Mm-hmm.
And then, depending on how sunny the winter is, it has to be altered.
That's a lot of moving parts.
Yes, a lot of moving parts. So if it's a really dark winter, they may add light, or they may add temperature, make it warmer, colder, to make it grow, make it slow down, so that they can time it. They also can use growth regulating hormones to speed it up or slow it down. I knew one grower that was trying to slow it down and used too much.
Oh, no.
And he ended up with 6-inch tall Easter lilies.
So
not all of them he was able to salvage, some, but he did some fun stuff with them. He did like really cute little things with them and put them in arrangements with other things, and he sold them all. They look great, but it wasn't the plan.
Right.
It was sort of like making lemonade.
Out of lemons, yeah, you got to do what you can.
Out of Easter lilies. So. But the Easter lilies actually are out of Japan, and they were first introduced in England in about 1819, but they didn't make it to the U.S. until about 1880. And lily bulb production was almost completely in Japan, and then a little bit in the southern U.S. But then World War II happened, and guess what? No more Easter lilies out of Japan.
Right.
So that was when the industry kind of went crazy, and there were about 1,200 growers from Vancouver, Canada, all the way down to Long Beach, California. And so there were a lot of production. And America is really the primary place where Easter lilies are used as an Easter plant. They're not not so popular elsewhere, even though they're part of the Catholic Church a lot. You'll see churches filled with them. They're probably more popular in America than any place else.
I believe it.
But over the years, it's really interesting because, as I said, Easter lilies are hardy and can grow around here. They're not 100% reliable,
mm-hmm.
and they're not 100% reliable in all the places that they were growing. And the 1,200 growers are down to about 10.
Wow.
And those 10 growers produce all the Easter lily bulbs that are grown in all the greenhouses in North America.
That's astonishing.
It is, yes. But as soon as you start to move inland from the coast, the weather becomes less predictable.
Right.
And so as, I think it was like 10 miles or something, as soon as you go more than 10 miles inland, then you have a risk of losing your crop like once every 5 or 6 years completely. And so it got narrowed down and smaller until it was just the area that was perfect for production. They get the cold period they need, they go dormant, they come back, they're not killed by frost, they're not frozen over the winter. And so all of the Easter lilies come out of about 10 growers from Northern California and Southern Oregon. They're all in that area. But if you happen to have an Easter lily, there's a couple things that you want to do. First of all, you want to pull out all the boy parts.
Oh.
Yes, the anthers. Yeah, you got to pull them out. As the flowers open, you want to pull them out. And they look like, when the flowers first open, they look like little brown beans.
Oh, you know, that's what those are.
Yeah, they're okay. Anthers. And if you leave them on there, first of all, the natural progression of them maturing causes the flower to age. It's a chemical thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it will cause the flowers to age more quickly. On the other hand, if you pluck them off, that preserves, they do not age the same way. They're not producing the chemicals that are telling them to mature so that they will last significantly longer.
Hmm.
But there's a secondary reason. In addition to the whole aging thing, there is the ugly thing. And as the anthers mature, they get really this pretty kind of orangey, rusty color.
Right.
And they shed
pollen everywhere.
Yes, everywhere. And it stains everything, especially the petals of the beautiful white Easter lilies. They get stained, and then they look really ugly and dirty. And so not only is the flower aging, but it looks uglier in the process. And if it gets on your clothes or on your lace tablecloth or anything else, it is
impossible to get out.
It's very difficult to get out.
I remember when we were preparing for the wedding, I was lent a book on floral arranging for weddings, and they said never, ever, ever use lilies in your bouquet if you can help it, especially, you know, if you're wearing a white dress, because that is impossible to get the pollen out.
It is very difficult, mm-hmm. and that Easter lily pollen is really vividly rust color. Pretty, mm-hmm. pretty color. I like the color, but not on my clothes.
Right.
So you want to pluck those off. When you're picking Easter lilies, if you're running out to buy an Easter lily today to bring as a house gift, then what you want to do is buy the one that has only one flower open. You want to get the ones that have as many buds as possible. And that way you'll get to enjoy them inside as they open. When you put them inside, you want to at the very least cut off the foil wrap from the bottom and put it on a plate. The foil wrap is pretty, so you want to leave it on to cover the ugly pot, but you want to remove it from the bottom so it drains, and you want to put it on a plate so it doesn't stain anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to make sure that you keep it well watered. Let it get a little dry, but keep it well watered, and do not put it in the sun.
Oh. I mean, my family never really grew a lot of lilies because my dad was always so allergic. So I don't, this is all
lilies?
New to me, yeah.
Well, when you're keeping it inside as a houseplant, if you put it in a sunny window, the flowers will cook.
That makes sense.
So while it's in bloom, you put it in a bright spot.
Mm-hmm.
It can go in the center of your dining room table if you have a sunny window in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to leave it there forever. You don't want to put it near where the cat's going to eat it or Juniper's
right.
going to get to it. Because they are poisonous. So
very, very. Even the water.
So you want to, you know, be careful about mm-hmm. that. But when the flowers fade, then you move it back into the sun. And again, gradually, don't take it from your dining room table mm-hmm. and put it on a southern exposure outside.
Of course.
You want to get things gradually so that they don't burn. And that, but they will, once danger frost has passed, you can plant them outside. And only because they're not used to it. Once they're in the ground, they'll be okay. And if you get them in the ground soon enough, and they get a little bit of a chill. Sometimes you get a second bloom in the summer.
That's fun.
Yes, and if under those circumstances, it will bloom much later, like late August, because it already bloomed once. But under normal circumstances, when it has a normal growth cycle, it will come back and bloom, hopefully for many years. Again, they're not 100% reliably hardy forever, but they will bloom for you on a regular basis in July. So you don't have to throw them out. You can stick them in the ground.
That's great.
But don't eat them.
Don't
let the dog eat them. Don't let the cat eat them. But they are beautiful. So, but at this point in time, over 95% of potted Easter lily bulbs come from Northern California and Southern Oregon. So that is the history of the Easter lily.
That's really cool.
Well, I thought it was appropriate since today is
Easter.
Yeah, it is.
So. Yeah, and I mean, you walk into any grocery store, they're filled, absolutely filled to the brim with these Easter lilies. It's incredible that they're just coming from a small number of growers.
Okay, and here's another little tip. If after the holiday, they're on sale for, you know, even if the flowers are gone, scoop them up. Scoop them up because you can stick them in the ground and have a ton of them blooming at a reduced price. People aren't going to buy them for as gifts when they're past their prime. So if there's any left after the holiday and you can get them at a bargain price, go for it.
Yep. Snap them up.
Snap those babies up. Absolutely. All right. So let's see. I think we're expecting a phone call shortly. So I think TJ's going to call in. We're going to have a little chat with my son, who's the farmer, farmer in the Dell. So we will have a chat with him. He should be calling any minute. But in the meantime, there are other things going on. And since we're on the subject of Easter lilies, can I throw in a little plug for magic lilies?
Yes.
Is that okay?
That's more than okay.
I need magic lilies.
Mm-hmm.
I need magic lilies. And for those of you who don't know what a magic lily is, it's sort of related to amaryllis, but it's hardy. And it's one of those weird plants that does, it puts out all its leaves in the spring. No flowers. Just leaves. Lots of leaves. Abundant leaves. But they're just green and they look kind of like oversized grassy leaves.
Right.
And then they all go away. They completely disappear. And then, starting in probably early August, they send up these flower stalks. And the flower stalks are amazing. If you look in the morning and then look again in the afternoon, they will have doubled in size. They also have a really weird shape, and they're a little phallic. So, I mean, they are. Mother Nature has a theme, and she keeps using it over and over and over. I mean, not only in the animal kingdom, but the fungi kingdom and the plant kingdom. She uses the same design. So they are a little weird looking at first. But when they pop open, they are sort of a loose sputnik of pinkish-purple trumpet-shaped flowers. And they're just these stalks with no leaves. They have no leaves when they come up.
It's magic.
And it is magic. It's like they just pop up out of the ground, and then they explode in these arrangements. And they multiply from one year to the next. You get lots more.
Right.
And you get a whole patch of them, and you don't have to do anything. You can leave them in the ground for years, and they really are kind of amazing, and I want some. I don't have any at Tiny Farm. I had a beautiful patch of them at Blooming Acres, and it was right in a key spot in front of the house, and I had a little dog named Magic Lily because I got her when she was when the Magic Lilies were in bloom, and I have pictures of her in the Magic Lilies, which was kind of fun. But it's something, you know, August is when the annuals start to, you know.
Right, they start to go downhill a little bit.
And they need some attention, and there's not a lot of other things blooming, not a lot of tree things blooming.
Right.
And so they add a really wonderful burst of color at a time of year when things are getting kind of boring.
Right.
So you've been looking at these annuals for like, you know, a couple of months already, and and they look good and they're pretty, but this is like a little spark right in the middle of summer. All right, so we're going to go to the phones now, and we're going to say good morning to my son. Happy Easter, honey.
Happy Easter. How are you?
I'm good. We going to see you today?
I'm not sure as of now, but I figured I'd call in. I meant to call in during your first show, so congratulations for being back on the air in the all-new Garden Show.
Thank you. It's good to be here, and Jordan's a big help, and Sean is my button manager over there, and he's so easy to work with, so that's good. We miss Jared, of course, but we're moving on and going to be bigger and better than ever. Yay, go team. So what's happening at the farm these days?
Well, we did have a frost, I think, the last two nights. I don't know about up north, but I know down in Burlington County, we were right on the verge of frost. So things are slowing down a little bit. Pansies are doing well, and we are, like, counting down and on the verge of our first Jersey Fresh product that will be available across the state, which would be one of my favorites and your favorites, the asparagus. That's probably a few weeks away as of now.
I can't wait. Mm-hmm. I can't wait. We did a bit of an overhaul on my asparagus bed. Last year was the first year we got enough to really harvest any to eat.
Yeah.
But we had cannas that were growing in the asparagus bed and growing with gusto. So we dug all of them out and fertilized. And did we add a layer of compost on the top? We put a little compost on the top and then fertilized and then mulched it with wood chips and have it all fenced off so that the dogs can't get into it. So it's in really good shape and really cleaned up nicely. And so I'm excited. And my asparagus is purple. So I'm really looking forward to that. But you grow some of the best asparagus I've ever had. So you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, we're down in Chesterfield in Burlington County, New Jersey, Katona Farms. We've just recently moved. We are over on 43 Marjoram Road now. I don't know if you've been to that property, but you've been to a couple of the other farms that we have. This is the other farm that has asparagus. We've got about 14 acres of asparagus we're going to raise this year, and it's the soil is a little bit sandier, so that helps as far as drainage, but we have a cultivator that spins up the dirt and covers the asparagus and kind of keeps it warm and helps it to continue growing every day. And then once we have it, we start picking that every day, and as you know, you have to pick it every day, otherwise it grows and grows and grows and then goes to seed and flowers out, and then you don't have any asparagus.
So how long do you consider the harvest season to be?
We usually, most of the time, say, depending when Easter is, probably the Easter time, assuming conditions are right, through Father's Day. Now, in years past, we've stopped right at Father's Day or a little before, just because we have so much else going on the farm that has to get tended to. But this year, we're doing things a little differently. We're in a bit of a transition, as you know. I won't get into that, but we're in a transition, and now we're doing strictly retail, excuse me. So I think we're going to be able to focus a little longer and perhaps pick the asparagus a little longer than Father's Day. We do know some guys pick down in South Jersey well into August, so I think we're going to give it a try. There's two full-time guys, myself, and a couple other part-timers, so I think if we can find something that works, a routine that works, we may be able to have asparagus later than Father's Day, which is exciting because at 4th of July, it's time for sweet corn. But if we could have some asparagus to throw on the grill, I know you would be excited about that as much as we are.
Yes, I would be. Asparagus is definitely one of my favorites. No doubt about that. And, you know, there's the whole debate about fat asparagus versus skinny asparagus. And I never understood the attraction of the skinny asparagus. What do you think about that, TJ?
Well, I think it really comes down to what are you doing with it. I know pasta and broccoli is one of your favorite dishes with shrimp. I like to make it at home, except I take out the broccoli and I grab the thinnest asparagus, which is about the same thickness and dimensions of the pasta that I use, so that works out nice. But I know a couple other people that like to roast it, and the thicker asparagus is a little bit hardier and a little more robust, so that when you do roast it, it still has some strength to it, and you know, you're not losing all the flavor out of it.
Well, in my opinion, there's a couple of things. One is that when you buy a bunch of asparagus that is not uniform, people think that the thicker asparagus are tough. Well, it's because they take longer to cook, and if you don't separate them out or put the skinny ones in later, then you either get mushy skinny ones or undercooked fat ones. So you need to be aware that they're not all cooking at exactly the same time. So that's one thing that you need to pay attention to. I find that a bit of a problem because I harvest from the garden and I can't necessarily get a whole bunch mm-hmm. of asparagus that are the same size. So right. when you're harvesting it and you have different sizes, you need to pay more attention to that. But the other thing is, and this part is true, and that is that it has to do with a surface to volume ratio. That if you have a skinny asparagus, you have more of the outside in relation to the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And the outside is the tougher part.
Right.
So if you have a fatter asparagus, you have more inside in proportion to the skin. And so I think, in general, if you have a choice, that the fatter ones, you're going to get more tender asparagus and less skin. And so I go for the fat ones myself. If I'm picking out a bunch in the market someplace and I have a choice, I'm going to go for the fat ones. What do you think of that, TJ?
Yeah. I think it's a great point, and a lot of times we sell the asparagus in smaller bunch, meaning the thin, and then we have bunches in the large. A lot of times it ends up being like a field run type, just because we have so much we have to produce, and some people get a little frustrated for the exact reasons that you just mentioned. But as a whole, the spears of asparagus, when they come up, people also think, oh, well, that one sat out in the field longer because it's fatter. No. And I'm sure you know this, they either come up as a thin asparagus or they come up as a large asparagus. And I've sent you pictures over the years and shown you pictures, and I think we had you out in the field, we had Secretary Fisher out in the field and Farm Bureau President Reich at the time.
I was there that day. I was there that day, but I think I was painting your truck.
Yes, you were there. You saw. Yeah, so you've seen the asparagus in the different sizes, and some of the pieces come up really fat and some of them come up pencil thin, but it's a great locally grown vegetable that's nutritious and delicious depending how you prepare it. We have this beautiful thing called the internet that has all kinds of recipes out there and all kinds of different things to try. And the most important thing is it's Jersey Fresh, and it kicks off the Jersey Fresh season officially when asparagus is out. And what's better than Jersey Fresh produce?
Nothing is better than Jersey Fresh produce. But I will tell you that I went out to lunch with a good friend, and we went to the Cheesecake Factory, which generally has pretty good food.
Yeah.
And they had an appetizer there of breaded, crispy asparagus that was to die for. Huh. I never had it like that. It must have been deep fried.
Was
they
it?
Breaded it with something, and then they deep fried it, so it had this nice, crunchy surface. Oh, they were so good. They were so good. Never had anything quite like that. And I don't even know if I could do it at home because I don't have a deep fryer, but there are so many ways. Grilled, stir-fried, steamed. One of my favorite ways to serve it is to steam it and melt brie cheese over the
Ooh.
Top. Yeah, that's really good. Mix a little milk in it and cook it, and so it gets a little creamy, and then pour that over the top.
And you know what would be really good, too, is I love, of course, asparagus and lemon is a classic combination, but you could always toast some breadcrumbs and do a little Parmesan cheese with, like, a little lemon or lemon vinaigrette on roasted asparagus. Just put all that crumble all over the top. That would be killer.
So, honey, what else is happening? What else are you going to have at the farm? Why don't you tell everybody where you are, because asparagus season is coming, and people can buy it by the bunch or by the crate from you, right?
Yes, we'll have it available by the case, half case, and by the bunch. And again, we're at our new location, which is 43 Marjoram Road, Chesterfield, New Jersey, beautiful Burlington County, probably about, I'd say, an hour at most from most of your listeners. Over the years, we've had more and more of your listeners stop down for produce or stop down during the fall for the agritourism. But we kick off our season with Jersey Fresh asparagus. We bring in a lot of locally sourced produce at our market. I have the pleasure and the blessing of being in charge of managing our retail market. I've been trusted with the reins for the last almost 10 years now. It's hard to believe. But I bring in whatever's true and local for what's in season, and then we sprinkle in some other things to complement what we have. We have a full line of jarred goods. We have fresh peach cider, which I believe you've had
before.
Oh,
that's awesome, the peach cider. Yep, it's great.
That sounds incredible.
We have raw honey that comes from a local Jersey Fresh farmer down the road, the Trapannies, you know them. We used to do a lot of business with some surrounding farmers that have since retired, but we have found other sources, and it's just a nice mom and pop family run farm. Chip's third generation in his family to take over, and he's still going strong over at this new location. And in addition to that, he's raising 40 acres of hay, and we're getting into some straw again this year and some other things related to agriculture
all
as
right,
well.
One more question before we go, and this is very
yes.
important. How are the horses?
Everybody's fine. We are in a bubble here. We had maybe one branch break, and it didn't even damage anything. One branch fell off a tree during some of those bad storms. We had offered some services to other people in the surrounding area, but nobody in our immediate area seemed to suffer, and the animals are all well. We've got the lawnmowers all greased and ready to go. We're going to fire them up in the next few hours, in fact, and start cutting grass and getting these fields in shape for another fantastic warm season.
So how many rescue horses are you taking care of right now?
We are down to, the numbers are down. We're in the mid-40s. It's probably about a third of them are our personal animals. A third of them are rescues, and then a third of them are rescues that people just fell in love with the place and ended up boarding their sanctuary animal with us. And mm-hmm. that operation happens 6 minutes away from the other operation where we take on the vegetables and produce.
You guys keep busy, that's for sure. All right, honey, we have to move on, but it's always a pleasure. Have a great Easter. Extend our Easter wishes to everyone else over there, and maybe we'll see you later. And thanks for calling in.
Same to you. Congrats on the new show, and have a great rest of the show, ladies.
Thank you, TJ. Bye-bye. All right, we need to take a little break now, I would say. All right, so we will be back after this.
More of the all-new Garden Show with Peggy Ballester-Howells continues next on 95.1 WOLD. To stay connected with Peggy in between shows, log on to her website, peggygarden.com. That's P-E-G-I garden.com. And be sure to bookmark it and check back often.
Your home is your greatest investment. Boy, isn't that the truth?
Mm-hmm.
When it comes time to attend your most pressing needs, call Rest Assured Restored at 732-781-8857. And remember, you can always go to my website, and I have a list of all my sponsors there, so you can get the contact information. And the person that you want to talk to there is Kelly, and he will come out to you, and he will give you an estimate for anything that you need to have done. It could be water or mold damage. It could be bathroom remodeling. It could be cleaning out your garage or attic. You found the help you need at Rest Assured. Now, again, the number is 732-781-8857, and they have a website, which is restassuredrestored.com. And if you mention you heard about Kelly and his team on the all-new Garden Show, you'll receive a 10% discount on all the services they provide. Rest Assured Restored is a proud founding sponsor of the all-new Garden Show on 95.1 WOLD, home of New Jersey's greatest hits.
As lovers of gardening, we sometimes think that others are just like us, the salt of the earth, always amenable to helping our fellow members of the human family. Regrettably, there will always be those who prey on the naivete of homeowners who think that nothing bad will ever happen in their neighborhood. Those days are over, and our friends at Elite Surveillance are here to make sure that if anyone ever tries to mess with you, they will regret it. Call 732-702-2434 to receive a free estimate on a brand new state-of-the-art camera system to cover your biggest investment, your home, your property, and your beautiful garden. Andrew and his Elite Surveillance crew are the folks to trust when it comes to top-notch professional installation of a surveillance system that will keep you connected to what's happening 24 hours a day. Call Elite Surveillance at 732-702-2434 or visit EliteSurveillanceNJ.com to learn more. And be sure to mention the All New Garden Show to receive a 10% discount on your same-day installation.
Family-owned Mike's Country Market Nursery and Landscaping offers its customers the services and merchandise for all your gardening and lawn care needs this spring. In business since 1980, Mike's Country Market offers seeds, trees, and everything in between. They are experts in the world of landscaping services, hardscaping, as well as delivering topsoil or mulch right to your home. Shopping hungry? Order a sandwich in the award-winning attached deli. Visit the country. Mike's Country Market is located at 200 Riva Avenue, right off of Milltown Road, on the East Brunswick-Milltown border. Their number is 732-821-7144. That's Mike's Country Market Nursery and Landscaping, 732-821-7144. Mike's Country Market is a proud founding sponsor of the All New Garden Show on 95.1 WOLD, home of New Jersey's greatest hits. WOLD.
You're listening to the All-New Garden Show with Peggy Ballester-Howells on 95.1 WOLD. You can call Peggy now with your gardening questions at 908-448-0951. That number again is 908-448-0951. Once again, here's your host, Peggy Ballester-Howells.
Welcome back to the Garden Show. I'm Peggy Ballester-Howells, and I'm here with...
Jordan.
And today's Easter.
Yeah, it is.
So happy Easter, everybody.
Happy Easter.
But it's some other holidays, too, you were just
mentioning.
Yeah,
I think Passover is right now also, so happy Passover, everybody. I think it's also Ramadan, so, you know, happy Ramadan.
Which one is Ramadan?
I think it's like a fasting holiday, but it's like reverent. I'm not quite sure.
Well, we should find out about that one.
Yeah.
Anybody want to call and tell us what Ramadan is? I would like to know. Sean, do you know what Ramadan is? I want to know.
Yeah, I do, too. I can.
Inquiring minds want to know. Okay, so we're going to go to the phones right now, and we're going to say good morning to Bob from Piscataway. Good morning, Bob.
Morning, Peggy. Good morning, Jordan. Happy Easter.
Good morning.
Happy Easter.
And happy Passover and Ramadan to all your listening audience.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm sure they'll all appreciate that. So what can I do for you today?
Yeah, I'm calling about potatoes. I have no success growing potatoes ever.
Really?
And this year I'm going to... Yeah, and this year I'm going to give it another try. I'm digging a really deep bed. There's a bed where there's a lot of old tree roots. The tree got taken down last year, so I'm now taking the roots out of it. So it's going to be nice and deep. I have some seed potatoes, Yukon Gold. They have eyes on them. I have some questions on how to plant that. Do I cut the potatoes in pieces? If I do that, do I do it ahead of time, the day before? How do I do this? Do I plant the eyes up? What do I do to have success this year?
Okay. Potatoes are fun. You do need to dig a trench. You do need to loosen up the soil since it's a root crop. You know, it needs to have be loose enough for the potatoes to expand. They do need a really sunny location. And when you dig the trench, you want to put the potatoes in. Anything that's the size of a chicken egg, or smaller, you can plant whole. But if it's bigger than that, you want to cut them. Make sure that you have an eye available to face up. And you can just cut them in half, unless they're really big. If they're really big, you can cut them in quarters, or then there's a tricky way of cutting them where you cut a small piece off and then take the bigger piece and cut that in half. So that's sort of in thirds. But however you cut them, you need to make sure that you have an available eye to grow. You can cut them a day ahead of time and then let them harden off a little bit to reduce the chance of rotting. And then you want to put them in the ground with the cut side down. Or just, if they're not cut at all, just lay them in there, but make sure that the eye is facing up, however.
Okay.
And then you cover them with soil. And you don't have to fill it. You just cover them. I filled it this year. We'll see what happens. But you can just cover them thoroughly and then let them grow. And then as they grow, you continue to fill in the trench. And as they continue to grow, you continue to fill in. And what happens is it will send out more roots and more potatoes. But the other important aspect of this is the potatoes are going to try to grow relatively close to the surface. And as you add the soil, it covers them so that they're not exposed to the sun. Because if they're exposed to the sun, they turn green. And green is, the green in potato skins is called solanine. And it's yucky. It's not going to kill you, but it is considered toxic in very large quantities. Mm-hmm. It is considered carcinogenic in very large quantities. I think a large quantity means one person would have to sit and eat an entire tractor trailer load of potatoes in order for it to be a problem. But why take the risk? So you want to keep them covered at all times so that they don't turn green. It's also bitter. It has a not great taste to it, so you want to avoid that. And that's one of the reasons you can keep adding the soil as the potatoes develop, and you should be good.
Okay, just so I'm clear then, I plant them about 5 inches deep and don't cover the full 5 inches with dirt?
That's correct. And I would go 5 inches, five, 6 inches deep, cut side down, cover them completely, and then as they grow, you can add to it and fill in the trench. But even if you fill in the trench, you can keep going. You can go get higher eventually as they grow. You keep adding to the bed so that all of the tubers continue to be protected, because they will continue to produce tubers off of the stem. You can, one technique of growing them, which I've never really tried, but I started to try it 1 year when I was managing one of the co-ops, but I got so busy I didn't have the time to follow through and keep it up. One way of doing it is to grow them in tires. Tires. And you plant them in the bottom, in the first tire, and then you cover it with soil, and then it will grow above the tire, and then you add another tire and you fill it with soil, and then just have the top leaves above, and then you keep going as the plant grows. And supposedly when you're done at the end of the season, you take off the first tire and there's tubers, and then you take off the second tire and there's tubers, and you go all the way back down. I would like to try that sometime. I actually don't have access to a lot of tires, so.
Believe it or not.
So it's not the kind of thing that happens. But there are people with tires. If you have them, you could try it. So, but the whole idea is, you know, that they continue to make the tubers as the plant grows, and that's why you keep adding soil and soil and soil, because you don't want any of them to turn green.
Right. Okay. I mean, I've done the tire method, no success. I've done the potato bag method, no success. I've done the hay in the potato bag method, no success. I'm going to try this way again, because I love potatoes. I know they taste really good when they're fresh out of the ground. I'm going to give it another try. I'm not giving up.
Okay. Well, I have faith that this is the year that it's going to work for you, Bob.
I hope you're right. And how, son, if it's getting 6 hours of sun, is that enough, or it needs to be more?
Well, more would be okay, but I think 6 is sufficient, because it's not going to be pitch black for the rest of the time. It's still going to be bright. But if it gets 6 hours of good sun and bright the rest of the day, I think you'll be okay.
Okay.
Okay?
Sounds good.
All right, I'll keep my fingers crossed. I want you to send me a picture when the little plants emerge out of the ground, okay?
I would like to be able to do that.
Okay, very good. All right, you have a great holiday. Thanks for calling.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Okay, so we're going to go now over to Colts Neck and say good morning to Frank. Hey, Frank.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Happy Easter. I just recently met Frank. Jordan is here. She's on the air with me. And Jordan and I showed up at Frank's place. Could you tell me about your place a little bit?
Yeah, so it's a new garden center. It was previously a garden center for several years, and the old owner kind of abandoned it, and I bought it about 2 years ago, and we just opened up about 7 acres. We have a pretty big size for more geared towards landscapers, with some large B&B plantings and large evergreens, and then we have another side to the garden center where it's geared a little bit more towards homeowners with container plants, some B&B stuff, but a little bit more manageable stuff to move around. We're located right in Colts Neck, right on the highway, the corner of Highway 34 and Laird Road. We're open 7 days a week, and yeah, it's pretty much everything in a nutshell.
You're open today. It's a holiday. Are you open today?
We are open today.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not too busy, but we are open today.
All right. We were there,
mm-hmm.
and one of the things that we noticed as soon as we walked in was how great everything smelled.
Yes.
Right, Jordan?
It smelled so good, Frank.
It did. It was all the nice wood chips and the fresh wood on the all the fencing that you put up. It looks beautiful, and it just has this. It draws you in. It makes you want to go in because it smells so good and it looks so pretty. But you also have an interesting way of laying everything out. You have this nice, kind of wavy, kind of curvy path. What's that path made out of? Some kind of...
So that path is made up of pavers.
Yes.
Cambridge pavers.
Yeah. That's top of the line.
Mm-hmm.
That's top of the line. But it also works, you know, it's a little bit raised up and it works to contain the mulch on the sides. And it just looked so inviting because it was a nice, it wasn't a straight path. It was a nice wavy path. And then you have different plants on either side. But you had a couple of unusual things. And I already put in my blog, I don't know if you went to look at my blog, but I already put in my blog about how I bought the tricolor beech and how it's planted and how it is a truly amazing plant. I had no intention of buying this when I got there, but you brought me over and showed it to me, and it was instantaneous. I had to have it. I had to have it. So what else have you got that's kind of cool over there? Because I know there's a few things. There's that weird rose. Tell me about that rose, that yellow rose.
Yeah. Yeah, we got climbing rose. They're made by a company out of Lancaster. It's a climbing rose. I believe it's a yellowish white color. Kind of like popcorn color.
Hmm.
I got these the unusual maples that not many people have seen or heard of. The coral bark maples.
Oh, they're so gorgeous. And the ones that you had, they were glowing.
Yeah.
They were really fluorescent. They were really spectacular, Frank, I have to say. Blew the budget with the tricolor beach, but those those
they might be next.
Coral bark maples were stunning. So what else have you got?
So I got coral bark maple. We got a ton of crepe myrtles for all sizes from 4 to 5 foot tall up to 10 to 12 foot tall. We got every type of flowering tree you could possibly think of, from pears, plums, crab apples, pretty much everything.
Is there a crab apple that you really like? Because I tend to shy away from them because of the leaf drop in the summer. Is there one that you find to be more disease-resistant that you like?
No, I mean, I'm not, like, a huge fan of the crab apples. We kind of just have them because, you know, there's a lot of plants here that we just need because even though I may not like them, others like them. As I told you when I met you the other day, my favorite tree is actually that tricolor beech.
Yeah.
I got a little on that one that's back there, that nice big one from my own house. And then I got a ton of container plants from hydrangea, probably 10 different varieties of hydrangeas, Endless Summer, the original Twist and Shout.
Yeah, that's a beauty.
Annabelle, pretty much
you have Annabelle?
Annabelle's
a nice one. That's a white pom-pom one. That's really pretty. They're not so common to find. That's great that you have that. What was that weird evergreen?
Oh!
There was an evergreen. Began with
it was
a
some
w.
kind of spruce.
No, I don't think so.
No?
No. It began with a W. And it had really long needles, and it was in the back. Do you remember?
Wolf?
Well, there was a wolf was in the name somewhere. Do you remember what that one was?
Oh, the wolf pine.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Vanderwolf pine.
Vanderwolf, that's it. Yeah. That's it. I had never seen that before. Tell me about that one.
So that's a slow-growing pine. Most people think of pine, you just think of big green, turns yellow, drops all of its needles, not that popular of a plant. This particular pine is got that bluish gray color to
it. Yeah, it's so beautiful.
Yeah, the needles look sharp, but they're soft to touch. Very, very slow grower. It doesn't grow quick at all. It sheds a little bit of the interior growth towards the end of the season, but overall, it's a pretty nice pine that grows very, very slow. I also have these other pines, which I never heard of them. Most of this crazy, unusual stuff that we have that you're not going to see at your normal garden center was grown on the other side of the country in Oregon. Now, that's where many garden centers bring a lot of this ornamental stuff in from. One of the plants that I have is called Frank Pine. I've never heard of it. When I was purchasing it, I made sure it grew in this zone. And it's a tight, columnar-looking fluorescent green pine. And it's probably about 2 to 3 foot wide. You know, the ones I have are anywhere from 5 to 7 foot tall. And, again, it's a super slow grower. Just one of those unusual things that you won't see at most garden centers that I'll have here. Besides those pines and these other evergreens, I have Weeping Beech, purple, green. We also have, what else do we got out there that's uncommon? Golden Hinokis, green Hinokis.
All right, I have a question about that pine. What was it called again? The one, the
Vanderwolf?
Vanderwolf. How tall does it get? What's its maximum height?
I would say a Vanderwolf pine, probably in absolute perfect conditions, is going to get about 15 to 20 foot tall. But
I think I need one of those. Mm-hmm. I might need one of those, Frank.
It very, very slow. And that's in perfect condition. But that's a question I get asked all the time. How big does this tree get? I'm also, I've been in the landscaping business for almost somewhere right around 23, 24 years. And that's one of the most common questions people ask you. How big does this tree get? And it all depends on where it's going. Is it going in full sun? Is it going in shade? Is it going in good soil? Is it going in clayey soil? Are you going to trim it, or are you just going to let it grow? How often are you going to water? Are you going to fertilize it? There's so many questions that can be asked back when someone asks how big something's going to get. So, you know, that pine probably gets somewhere in that 15 to 20 foot range. And I think that's if you just kind of let it grow, you take care of it, and you don't really prune it back.
Okay, Frank. Why don't you just tell everybody, you know, one more time, do you have a website? Do you have a phone number to let people know how they can get a hold of you if they want to get some of this cool stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Our address is 685 Route 34 in Colts Neck, New Jersey. We're on the corner of Laird Road and Route 34. I'm obviously the owner. I'm pretty much here 7 days a week, mainly 9 to 5, but I'm always here a little early. I'm always here a little bit late. Our phone number is 7.
That's what happens when you're the owner. That's what happens. Yep. All right, the phone number. Go ahead.
732-526-4600.
Okay, and do you have a website?
Yeah, it's thenurserycn.com.
Okay, there you go. So thank you very much for joining us today, Frank. Thank you for my beautiful tricolor beech. I sent you a picture. It's planted. We did a really good job planting it. I took a hose and soaked it. The first day I put about 5 gallons on. The second day, 2 days later, I put a hose on it, let it run for a couple of hours. So it's really watered in well. It's in a good spot. I will keep you posted. I'll send you a picture when it leaves out.
Oh, good. You're going to love it. Okay. You'll see when it gets that first color of the leaf, you're like, wow, this is beautiful. But yeah, let's keep in touch, and if you need anything, let me know.
Okay,
thanks for having
you.
Me today.
My pleasure. Happy Easter. Bye-bye now.
You as well. All right, bye.
Okay, we're going to take a little break now. The number here, 908-448-0951. Give us a call, and we'll be back after this.
This is the All-New Garden Show with Peggy Ballester-Howells. We'll take more of your calls next on 95.1 WOLD, home of New Jersey's greatest hits. The call-in line is 908-448-0951. That's 908-448-0951.
Thrivent is a proud sponsor of 95.1 WOLD and the All-New Garden Show with me, Peggy Ballester-Howells. Thrivent believes money is a tool, not a goal. Financial representative Amy Nichols will work with you to create a financial strategy that reflects your priorities and helps you protect the things that matter most to you, like your family and giving back. Amy can be reached at 610-871-3456, or you can visit her website at connect.thrivent.com/Amy-Nichols. Once again, Amy can be reached at 610-871-3456, or you can visit her website at connectthrivent.com/Amy-Nichols. That's connect.thrivent, That's Thrivent, thrivent.com/Amy-Nichols, and that's spelled N-I-C-H-O-L-S. And all that's a lot to write down and remember, but you can go to my website, and you can click on the sponsors, and all of this information will be a lot easier. But I'm going to say this, that Amy is a really easy person to talk to, mm-hmm. and makes you feel very comfortable and very... You will trust her and feel safe with
her. She puts you at ease.
She does. She puts you at ease. So don't hesitate. If you have questions, don't hesitate to call. All right? What's next?
It's spring, and what are the chances you'll be hearing this sound? There's no need to pull your shoulder out of your socket. Gary is the small engine specialist, and he is your one stop for lawnmower repair and maintenance. Gary offers pickup and delivery and can diagnose most issues right there at your home. And whether it's your lawnmower, edger, blower, power washer, generator, or snowblower, Gary's the man to call. If you own a machine and it takes gasoline, Gary the small engine specialist can fix it. Call 917-807-3901. Be sure to mention the All New Garden Show to receive lawn mower blade sharpening at no extra charge with every repair. That's Gary, the small engine specialist. 917-807-3901.
Mobile One, Lube Express of Edison, a family-owned and operated business serving Central Jersey for more than a decade. From oil changes to wipers, bulbs to maintenance services, they have it covered. And all new car warranties are covered too. No sales, no quotas, no commissions, just honest, quick lube service. Even better, you can now skip the lines and stop in for your New Jersey motor vehicle inspection, as Mobile One Lube Express is now a state-certified emissions test facility. Mobile One Lube Express, 758 Route 1 North in Edison, across from ShopRite. 732-253-8100. And at Mobile One Lube Express in Edison, their philosophy is, life is complicated enough, you take care of your family and job, and they will make sure you get there. Mobile One Lube Express of Edison is a proud sponsor of the All New Garden Show with Peggy Ballister Howells on 95.1 WOLD.
Now, back to more of the All-New Garden Show with Peggy Ballister-Howells on 95.1 WOLD. To reach Peggy, give us a call now at 908-448-0951. That number again is 908-448-0951. Once again, here's your host, Peggy Ballister-Howells.
Welcome back to the Garden Show. I'm Peggy Ballister-Howells, and I'm here with...
Jordan.
And we're going to go right to the phones, because we have Mary from Warren. Hey, Mary.
Mary. Good morning, Peggy.
Good morning. How you doing?
Hi, Jordan.
Hi, Mary.
Good. Beautiful day we got here
is
today.
It?
Happy Easter.
Oh, yeah. It looks like it's nice mm-hmm. out. Yeah, it looks like... It does look like it's nice out. Good, good. So,
yeah, it's cold. When I went to church, I had to wear my winter coat, but the sun is shining, and that just makes it feel that much warmer.
And how many Easter lilies were in church?
Actually, not very many this year. They did some other kinds of, like, more colorful flowers with blues and pinks and stuff. So
like spring flowers?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Were yep. there tulips? There must have been some tulips in there.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. There were some, but yeah.
So what can I do for you today?
Well, I had called last week and we started to talk a little bit about getting some privacy at the back of my daughter's new yard. And you had said to go ahead and put the mammoth sunflowers there for this year. And then that we could talk today about some other more permanent kinds of you know, things that would grow tall relatively quickly to give them a little bit of a block there at the back of their property.
Okay, a couple things. You don't want things to grow too quickly, because things that grow really quickly tend to die really quickly. And they tend to be weak wooded. So you want to have a blend of things, some things that will grow quickly and some things that will be more reliable. Now, also, is it a sunny location or a shady location?
It's pretty sunny back there.
Okay. All right. One of my favorites that grow fairly quickly. Is there a lot of room? That's another question. How much depth does she have? Is it a tight space, or is there room for things to go in there that are going to be, you know, wide and take up space?
They don't want things that are going to be really too wide. There's like an area, the first maybe 3 to 4 feet from the fence is, you know, dug up as kind of a garden. So they would really like stuff that would kind of stay within that area.
Okay, so 4 feet, you want things to stay 4 feet wide, about?
Yeah.
Okay, that's going to be tough. Yeah, so one thing that I would consider is putting things that are weeping, because weeping plants tend to stay more narrow.
Oh, okay.
So look for, and another thing is you want to look for plants that have the word columnar in their name, because they'll stay like a column, narrow. So you want to keep that in mind. You want things that are going to stay narrow.
Okay.
I would put in a couple of arborvitae. Mm-hmm. Not that arborvitae are my favorite, because they're not. They're kind of boring, although there are some interesting arborvitae. I have a few really weird ones, but they tend to be small. But you want to put in a few arborvitae, and you want to cluster them. You don't want them to be just uniformly spread out. You want to cluster them, and it's really important to get different sizes. You want to get a small one, a medium one, and a large one, and put them together. And then you can do further down, you can do another large one, and then further down you can do another combination, maybe two. But the reason that I suggest using all different sizes is, if you use them all exactly the same size and you put them all in at the same time and they all grow the same way and then one dies, it's almost impossible.
Then it looks terrible.
Looks absolutely terrible. Your eye is going to be drawn to the short, ridiculous one forever. But if you start out with all different sizes and one dies, you can put in a small one and no one will care, because you'll have all different heights to begin with. Sort of a self-protection for down the road. So that's one
thing. Okay.
That's one thing that I would do. I would also mix in some deciduous material along with the evergreen material to give you some color in the summer. For example, I like, if it's a sunny location, and this you can prune so it won't get too big, you can mix in a couple of crepe myrtles. And they can get tall, and you can shape them so that they don't stick out too far. And they'll get tall pretty quickly. They grow relatively quickly, but they will produce flowers for you all summer.
Which will make it look pretty back there.
Make it look pretty, not just right. So you do, and what you can do is where you put 2 arborvitae, you can kind of spread them out a little bit, and then just a little bit in front of the arborvitae, you put a crepe myrtle. So you have a little depth and a little bit of depth, and then the crepe myrtle will get fuller at the top and will help to give you more privacy, because the arborvitae will be tall and taper to a point at the top, and the arborvitae are going to grow the other way where they taper at the bottom and they grow upwards and spread out, and so they'll fill in and give you more privacy that way.
Oh, okay. That sounds good.
And then another thing that you might want to consider for a little bit of height is you might want to consider something that's grown on what's called a standard. Do you know what that is? Okay,
no.
It's when you grow something and you graft a young plant on the top of a tall, skinny, existing trunk. So you've got a tall, skinny stem, like tree roses. Have you ever seen tree roses?
Oh, yes.
Like
yes.
That. Only. Okay. Only it comes within a tree form. You can do trees like that. Last year, for this very same reason, we pulled out a dappled willow that I had because it was growing very low to the ground, and I had planted it before I realized they were putting up the big ugly building. And so it was full and beautiful, but it was all below the fence. So it wasn't helping with the big ugly building at all. So we took it out, and I found another dappled willow. I went down to Mel Madden's, and she had it for me, a dappled willow on a standard. So it's already, the trunk is already, what, 4 feet, 5 feet high? And the plant is above that. So it's already got height, and it's real bushy on top because that's where all the growth is. So if you put in a couple of those, it'll give you growth on the top right off the bat.
Oh, I like that idea.
Yeah, so you want to mix in a couple different things, and you can have the arborvitae as sort of your foundation, and then put other things in and arrange them in a way so that you kind of your eye kind of flows up and down with different colors, front and back a little bit. So, and the reason you want to stagger the arborvitae, so if you have three, you put two further back and one in front a little bit further, is that they will fill in the gaps in between a lot quicker if you have one in front. It'll give you privacy much much more quickly. So that's something. And the last thing I want you to look for is anything cool or weird that's weeping. Or, for example, weeping Norway spruces can be very narrow. I have a couple of weeping blue spruces that are very narrow. I have an Alaskan cedar. That's just a regular Alaskan cedar, and that's a little bit weird looking all by itself. But the weeping Alaskan cedar stays very narrow, and you might want to get one of those as like a focal point, an evergreen focal point. It'll stay narrow, and it'll grow straight up.
Oh, okay.
All right?
That's lots of good ideas.
Yes, lots of good ideas. Also, a tremendous amount of work when you put all this together, but it is a project. And I also would not shy away from some of those perennial sunflowers because they will come back every year and they won't give you privacy over the winter, but they will give you a significant amount of privacy in the summer or late. And they're really beautiful and they will fill in quite a bit until you get everything else in.
Yeah, that's and they want to see too the stuff that's there, what it looks like. There's some smaller things there if it's worth it to leave those or get rid of them. Because they don't know what anything's going to look like yet. They just moved in January, and they're...
All right, well, take pictures and send them to me, and I can tell you what they are and what they're going to do.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you.
All right, anything else I can do for you?
All right. No, I think I'm good. I'll be down to see you in a little bit with the when you're done with the...
The trout lilies.
The trout lilies.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
All right, we will see you shortly,
and
take pictures, and if you come across plants that you're not sure of that you want to buy, just, you know, send me a text, write to the email, go to my website, any of those, just, you know, don't, if you're not sure of something, ask first, don't buy it, and then ask, you know, so make sure you get the stuff that's going to work, okay?
Sounds great, okay.
All right, Mary.
Thank you.
Happy Easter. Okay, bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
And we'll be back after this.
More of the all-new Garden Show with Peggy Ballester-Howells continues next on 95.1 WOLD. To stay connected with Peggy in between shows, log on to her website, peggygarden.com. That's PEGI garden.com. And be sure to bookmark it and check back often.